association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Now, you may or may not be aware that in the 1980s, there was a deep rift between the Gardaí and the GAA over what the Gardaí saw as a serious disrespect shown to three Gardaí who were killed on duty. Now, it's just one of several stories included in a fascinating book called Changing of the Guard, and it's Jack Marinan's battle to modernise on Gardaí Síochána. It's written by Tim Doyle, himself a former Gardaí, and I'm delighted to say that Tim is with me. Good morning to you, Tim.
Good morning, Fran.
Good to talk to you. Congratulations on this.
It took me 10 years and I wrote it out of respect to the people that saved my life, not the Gardaí, unfortunately, but the Kidney Association. And it's going very well. They had a bad year last year, no collections, no much donations of kidneys either. But people should always keep in mind, because I saved my life anyway, definitely I'd be dead today only for it.
Absolutely, and we'd talk about that a little later if you wouldn't mind as well. The book is essentially about that second generation of Gardaí, Tim, and getting restless on issues such as pay and accommodation, for example.
That's right, yeah. It was money was always the Garda's god. The old men who closed their fist around £2-3 and a few shillings or whatever, and you'd need a crowbar to get a shilling out of it for anything, you know. But anyway, in 1961, there was a pay award, and there was guards under 5 years got nothing. And that was all right. But the next thing was, there was 60 or 70 men staying in Fitzgibbon Street up there from Crow Park, in rooms upstairs. And the next thing the government again decided to take £1 a week from the guards for their accommodation and a bit of grub, you know. So as one man said to me, he said, "'Twasn't too bad not getting an extra pound," he said. But he said, when they put their hand into our pocket and took £1 out of it, that was the one that broke the guards' back anyway. So they went on strike, about 60 went on strike, and they went through the city, and the whole, nearly 1,000 guards from the city and indeed the West, from Tipperary, from all over Ireland, they came up in buses and they went into the McCushla, and it was mayhem, as I've called it in the chapter.
And it was from the McCushla meeting, and many people might remember that as the dance hall there in Dublin, but it was from that chaotic meeting that Jack Marinan emerged and showed leadership pretty much immediately.
That's right, because there were massive men in the guards at the time, because they were all... The Road Traffic Act 1961 had come in, and they were picking all the biggest men, the supers from the city, who should go up to the depot and pick out the big, tall, 6'4" men and bring them down. And you could see a line of them from Parnell Monument down to Delia Street, directing traffic and all that. But Marinan was only an average-sized, clear man, very calm, very quiet. But he was called up on the stage. Somebody had the wit to call him up, and he just raised his hands. And it was like a light going on, as they said. There were many, many memories there in the book from members who heard this man talking for the first time. And he just, as I said, he put words in everybody's and thoughts in everybody's mind there, and they said, this is man. And he was elected, and he took charge of the meeting, and he decided, we're going to the country. And he the whole officers were all in total disarray. They didn't know what to do with him. Charlie Haughey was the minister. Sean Lemass, his father-in-law, was the Taoiseach. And they couldn't handle him at all. He took off for the country and he went down to Cork. He went to Limerick. And what happened then was...
And he was sacked, Tim.
He was sacked then by Eamon Doherty, who later was the training officer, very competent man there in Templemore. And so he was sacked. And then the Archbishop and Quaid, and there's a load of stuff there from him, archival stuff about how they dealt with him, how they met him, how they wrote him. And he saved the day for the government and put him back, and he arranged, got Marinan and his 11 men, two Tipperary men actually. There was the famous Dick Keating down from Grange and great family down there in Clonmel. My sergeant Arthur was a wonderful man, very, he'd never talk about it. All he'd say was, we did what we had to do. And Bill Corcoran from Torlis, he was a detective sergeant in Dublin after, long dead unfortunately, but he was another man that was sacked, but they all got back. And there's one of them now to the good down in your county, very revered man and a great man, Michael Murphy. He is a superintendent down there in Tipperary. And he's still to the good and a very brave man. But he was sacked as well, but he got back, and he was the only one that rose past the rank of sergeant.
They were remarkable men indeed. And speaking of, you know, getting to sergeant or whatever, like Jack turned down a possibility of going up the ranks, essentially, because he believed in what he was doing with what was the GRB, and of course it became the GRA then.
Because he was educated down in Clare and got to the best Flannans and got the trainee teacher and all that sort of stuff. And then a friend of his said, look, we'll go up to Dublin. There's an interview up there for the Guards. And he went off with Mick Guthrie, an old friend of his there. And they joined the Guards. And he was actually the training, when they passed out to their stations in Dublin, he was left behind. And the rumour was that he'd be going to a Gaeltacht station because of his size. He wasn't a huge man. Mm. Or that he'd go to a country station. So he walked into a country station, which was Dundrum at the time, or at Farnham. So he was offered promotion because they wanted to move him. They wanted to get him away from the representative body. So they offered him promotion. And he refused it, especially when Peter Berry, who was a leading light,
in the Department of Justice,
rang him up personally and said, I'll give you a station. I make a D sergeant out of you and put you into Tala. All right. Then he rang him again and said, I have a job for you in the depot as a D sergeant. Jack refused them all. And it was simple logic that was happening at the time. The family was huge. His parents from Clare were on to him and they said, look, don't leave the job this way. Don't go back into the job. Rejoin. Mm. And if you feel like it after a few months, you resigned then. But we don't want a Garda sacking in the job. Or in the family.
Of course, yeah.
In the family. It would be a stain, and it was true for a lot of families at the time. You know, because when I trained in 67 and 66, there was a lot of us sacked in my training class at that time. And if you were sacked, you had to get out of the country. You couldn't go home.
Jack was on our TV screens and on radio, of course. Those of us of a certain age would remember him well. I was intrigued in the book, though, and you mentioned him there, Peter Berry from the Department of Justice. He became his nemesis, didn't he? I think they had a grudging respect for each other.
They certainly
he was his nemesis, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Berry was a great man, and he proved himself in the trial in the 1970s armed trial after,
sure,
when he had the courage to stand up to ministers and all that stuff. But Jack and himself, Jack took him on paper, which was a famous thing in the job, take him on paper, and everything was on paper and written down, handwritten, and he wrote an expose demanding the pay for the Guards on the following, and he really went into town. I think the Guards were operating for 17 departments. Mm. In agriculture, all the different statistics, they were doing every government department they were working for. And when they agreed, the pay increase was agreed eventually. Berry wrote a private letter to Jack, which I have, telling him that he was in agreement with him, but that he couldn't say it publicly.
My God.
So, I mean, there was a lot of stuff happening. But Jack fortified himself with some of the greatest men. He had Gareth Fitzgerald as his financial officer, and he was involved in that. And there's photographs of Gareth and himself in the book at that period in the 60s when things were only beginning to warm up with the GRB, the Garda Representative Body, which was replaced in 78 by the GRA, the big GRA, which are there now.
Yeah, the brass of the Gardaí don't come out very well in the story of that period. Is that fair to say,
well,
Tim?
Yeah, well, see, they were under the thumb of the government.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the most famous thing, the most famous... Jack's, you know, will be remembered for the Conroy Commission.
Yes.
And that was when they took the... Judge Conroy took on and a group of hand-picked men by Jack. Ivor Kenny, he was a great management guru at the time. He wrote the Conroy Commission, and he was a brilliant man. There was 52, man and man, 52 recommendations, and every one of them were agreed by the Conroy Commission. Even though the Gardaí side were disagreed with mostly everything, but the problem was that a lot, and they made he made there was one famous they made one point. At the start, at the end of the thing, they said all this stuff is great, but he said the most important thing is that we have realised, this is the Conroy Commission reporting, that the Garda Commissioner is too close to the Department of Justice.
Yes.
And he said he should be more closer with his men from down, from back down. And he said that they're pulling the strings at the Department of Justice, different justice ministers. So that was the what came out of it, really. And that's
that was a huge statement at the time, of course, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, at the time, it was there was complete control. There was discipline, as is touched on there, was sacrosanct. If you were charged with a disciplinary offence and you denied it, you were committing another offence. So it was a whole total control.
It was just incredible.
But there was great men as well. There was great sergeants, inspectors, there was great men. And we then after 1970, when the big report came out, next thing that hit us was the murder of Dick Fallon. And that deflected us away completely.
Of course it did.
And
between that and the Troubles, I mean, the 1970s, it changed the whole dynamic, didn't it?
It did. Well, the Troubles came down gradually, you see. They came down slowly at first, but there was their era. There was different organisations raising money and robbing. And they shot Dick Fallon for £2,000 out of a bank in the city there. And then they blew up. Then they had the booby trap. And a lovely man, Sam Donegan, was blown up on the border.
Yeah.
Just an old woman going to the shops across the border. And he moved an old cone, an old thing, and it blew up and killed him stone dead. So, I mean, all the... And the collateral damage of that. But that came south. Then you had Mick Reynolds here, and not far from where I live, going down to cash his paycheck on a Thursday, and his wife and the little infant child on her knee in his private car, and the car pulled open the bank, he took off after it, and they shot him in the head dead. Shot him dead below over in the park. Mick Reynolds, a lovely young Roscommon man.
He was off duty at the time, of course, wasn't he?
Yeah. Plain clothes, but he was a brave man. But it's like Marlon said, and he wrote an awful lot of editorials, very heavy duty stuff against the government, and afterwards it took, in the 80s, it really bore fruit. But he said, the Gardaí, he said, are unlike any other people. They take an oath when they're trained.
Yes.
And he said, there's a sense of duty. And he said, when emergency happens, they move. They go anywhere. It doesn't matter whether they're armed or whether they have anything to help them. But and they were facing the guns, and that's what happened to Dick Fallon. He had a man captured for the murder of the bank and the keys, and they shot him in the head. No problem. Shot him there, and they shot Mick Reynolds in the head as well. And this was savage murder. And this came on down the line, and then in the mid-70s, you had the bombs came down and blew up the city of Dublin.
Mm.
And nothing ever happened that. They were back up the north before it.
Yeah.
You know, there was Jim O'Shea, a man, Jim O'Shea there, he was the first president of the Garda Representative Association. He told me he was above in the Department of Justice that day, and Cooney, the minister, came out and he said, "Just lads, we've got to go home." He said, "There's not been bombs blown up, we're in a bit of trouble." And Jim went off down the country home, but he never saw a Garda checkpoint on the way. So what happened? Where was the answer to that? So, I mean, it was chaotic, you know.
It's all so intriguing, isn't it? Do you know what I find kind of strange, though, and I have to say, and I know that Jack retired about, I think it was 1989, but a lot of the same issues are still current with us. You know, the state of the Garda stations, pay is still a huge issue, Tim. Some things haven't changed very much over the years.
No, because, they changed, which was great, they changed the training and the selection of men. But you're still getting certain, and you will get a small number of people. And I don't know what's the answer, where the answer is in this. But you will get people that, you know, every society in Ireland produces a different strata of people. And in our time, we were mostly disciplined. We were most played our football. You know, we weren't, there was no drugs, there was no guns at all. But then the guns came in, and that put pressure on people. And this is why I mystified myself by what's going on at the moment. Because in my time in the Guard, for example, I was a young Guard detective in Store Street, and it's in the book there. After the bombs came down in 76, there was this thing broke over, police brutality started. And anybody who arrested at the time would make a complaint because they were getting free legal aid was coming in from, and this was their avenue out. So I was charged with assault, and I appeared in the court, stood in the dock, and I was married with two children and another on the way, and the word was that I was going to be sacked and possibly jailed. as an example. So anyway, Jack Marnon came to my aid, provided me with backup with Hugh Flaherty and John Gallagher, two great barristers. And after a reserve judgment, I was acquitted. And within 2 years after that, I was promoted detective sergeant. Now, 2 years after that, I had to investigate a Garda in my own station for a serious matter. And I charged him. I charged the guard. I brought him to court. And he was convicted. And he was dealt with. Now, nowadays, it seems that all the stuff that's happening in stations and things going wrong, and that there seems to be no control over them at all. They're all blown out of the way. And I don't know, is it supervision or is it whatever, the way things are being dealt with? But in our time, we dealt with people, with guards, who were problems. And we dealt with them ourselves and we dealt them to the guards. And I don't know, today it's just news about this and they're fighting with this person. There's something going on here. There's guards being put out of duty and told, look, you're on probation again and you're back and left for 2 or 3 years. I mean, what kind of law is that? Or what kind of
It seems like morale is on the floor, Tim. You know,
that's right. And you see, all the vast majority of guards are out now on duty, and they're talking about discretion. Another word they're using was talking about discretion. There's no discretion now. That the technology gets to the discretion. That's a shame. That should not be allowed. Discretion was the greatest little arrows we had in our quiver if we went out. I mean, and then you meet people like, and they'd be in hard luck, or they might be in difficulty, a personal difficulty, and they might have no tax on their car or a bald tire, but you give them a chance. You'd have to. You couldn't, you're not an arbiter of everything, and if they expect you to go out and put everybody in pulse now and get information. And the final thing, which is probably the most important thing, I don't see a uniform guard at all.
On the beat?
Anywhere. And they're flying in a car with a blue light and four of them or a couple of them would jump out of it. And I know that's very important and what they're doing is great work and the special units. But I'd love to see a guard walking and looking at the people, not looking down at the street or not having a conversation with his comrades. I don't understand that. And, you know, sometimes you'd love to, I think that people should be experienced former guards should go into Templemore or go into the training and say, look, lads, this is what it's all about and this is our time.
A bit of common sense is what
you're saying. That's exactly it. Say hello. There was a commissioner, a famous commissioner, and there's a photograph in the book, Eugene Crowley, and his edict was always be the first to say hello.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a simple thing. You know, they mightn't say hello back to you, but they'll hear the voice and they'll say that could be
and it builds a bond in a community and all of that too, and a loyalty which is hugely important. Tim, sadly I'm out of time because I could talk to you all day. It's absolutely fascinating. The book is called Changing of the Guard. Yeah. I would highly recommend it. It's a fantastic
you're
read.
Great. And I just want to make a mention of two men down there.
Yes.
Especially Matt Gibbons, who's our retired members president, and there's one other man now, which I just bear with me, I have to mention this man has been a great support to me through my career even, and there was Pascal Feeney.
Okay.
Now he's living down in Tipperary. They're living in Tipperary, Nina, and down the south, and I just like to compliment them and to thank you and Tip FM for minding all the young recruits and the Tipperary people and the Tipperary people.
Well, you're very kind. And congrats on the book. It's a great read. We would highly recommend it. Thanks, Tim. And I know it's in all good bookstores at the moment. It's called Changing of the Guard.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry. In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.